Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. More than 27 million people in the United States do not have enough to eat, according to a new report from Hunger Free America, based on an analysis of federal data. It found that those without enough food over a seven-day period was an average of 40% higher in September and October of this year compared to those same months in 2021. Hunger Free America attributes the surge to pandemic-era benefits that have either been cut or reduced as prices for food, rent, healthcare, and fuel continue to soar. Congress, mostly Republicans, have refused to extend SNAP, once known as food stamps, the child tax credit, and free school lunches post-COVID. The states with the highest hunger crisis from 2020 to 2022 were Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and South Carolina. But Democratic-led states are also facing a crisis. Here is Susanna Morgan, president of the Oregon Food Bank, speaking to CBS News.
We are in the worst state of hunger since the 1930s. Here in Oregon, we are at 80% higher than we were pre-pandemic. We went up during the pandemic, and we have not come back down. And my best analysis, and I've been a food banker for 28 years, is that we have fundamentally set up our economy so that 40% of those of us cannot meet our basic needs. It is income inequality that is driving hunger.
That was Susanna Morgan, president of the Oregon Food Bank, speaking to CBS News. To her point about income inequality driving hunger, the federal minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. Congress, mostly Republicans, but some Democrats, have refused to raise the minimum wage since 2009. 53 million people, 53 million people, or 44% of all workers in the United States do not make a living wage, according to the Brookings Institute. The report from Hunger Free America recommends the passage of the HOPE Act of 2021, reauthorization of the child tax credit, which raised millions of families out of poverty, and immediately fully funding the WIC program for pregnant women, infants, and children under five, including maintaining increased allotments for fruit and vegetable purchases. So what can we do to force politicians to act? Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America, a nonprofit working to end hunger in this country, and author of All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America? And his latest book, America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. Hi, Joel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for focusing on this important topic. And unfortunately, California and the Bay Area have a particularly serious problem, so it's particularly fitting to be discussing this.
Yes, we do. And later in the show, we're going to speak with people who work at food banks in San Francisco, Marin, and then also Santa Rosa. I got to say, Joel, I'm frustrated. We do shows about this on a regular basis. We did so many shows during COVID. We saw the life changes that happened to people who had their food stamps increased, who had the child tax credit. They were finally able to breathe. I mean, I remember reading the New York Times. I'll never forget the story. A mom who works at a gas station, I don't remember in what state, but she said, I was finally able to buy my son a pair of shoes and take him out to lunch. And how cruel is it, Joel, that these families were able to breathe and then it was taken away from them?
Pretty darn cruel. I must say I am outraged, and the people I represent are outraged, but this isn't surprising. When the child tax credit was significantly increased and child poverty was cut in half, some people said to me, well, this is going to work so well, there's no way they'll ever take this away. And I said, well, maybe that's how it used to work in American government and politics, that if you proved a program worked, people would want to support the program. But unfortunately, that is not how American policy is developed anymore. The fact that something is extraordinarily successful has unfortunately not as much impact on public policy as it should. And as you indicated, virtually all Republicans in Congress and a handful of moderate to conservative Democrats oppose, for instance, extending the expanded child tax credit, and it has gone away. And so many of my colleagues sometimes say this is a non-political issue. This is ultimately a political issue. And my organization, Hunger Free America, is by law and practice nonpartisan, but we also don't have to pretend we don't know that today's a Wednesday, and we don't have to pretend that we don't know that it's conservatives in Congress who are pushing these policies, which are dramatically expanding hunger in America.
Exactly. And so let's talk about the changes that we did see under COVID. I mean, these were changes that have been desperately needed for decades. But to see, again, the food stamps going up, the child tax credit, free school lunches across the board, can you just remind us what change that made, and then what work you all did to ensure that Congress made those desperately needed changes?
Well, we certainly worked very hard at Hunger Free America, because we are advocacy as well as a direct service organization, to make it clear to the White House, this current White House, not the previous White House who didn't listen to anything we said, to make it clear to this White House how great the need was, and to make it clear to congressional leaders how great the need was. Fortunately, the senators from California and the representatives from the Bay Area are strong supporters of these programs. So the problem really wasn't in your immediate neck of the woods. And what they did is expand the SNAP program. Some of those expansions were done administratively by the Biden administration. So some of that expansion is going to stay, but some of that was taken away by Congress. As you said, universal school meals, which sometimes already existed in urban areas with concentrated areas of poverty, that was expanded to rural and suburban areas. That went away. Republicans in the House are even talking about now cutting the WIC program, the Women's Infants and Children program, that provides nutritional supplements to children under five and pregnant women. A program that has prevented a few hundred thousand babies from dying at birth, a pro-life program. And I must say, the very people in Congress who want to take away the bodily autonomy of women to choose whether to give birth or not are the very same people who want to force women to give birth against their will and then take away food from their children when they do. So insane. As I said, the child tax credit did cut child poverty in half when it was expanded, and that went away. And so we have charted in this study, and we have a chart in the study that shows, you can't see charts on radio, unfortunately, you'll have to imagine it, that when those aids went into effect, hunger in America plummeted. And when those were taken away, hunger went up. And sometimes we overwonk this, overcomplicate this. The way I put it is, if there's a drought and you add water, drought goes down. And then you shouldn't be shocked that when you take away water, drought goes up. Therefore, if there's a hunger crisis and you give people more food and more cash to buy food, then hunger will go down. And we shouldn't be shocked that when you take away that extra cash, when you take away that extra food, hunger goes up. And I must say, many of the people who support cutting these safety net programs, as you mentioned, do oppose an increase in the minimum wage. So if you're a conservative, and you don't think the government should be spending more money on these programs, given that most people who are hungry in America are in working families, why in the world wouldn't you support a stronger national minimum wage, which wouldn't cost taxpayers a penny, and in fact would save taxpayers a lot of money by reducing the reliance of many workers on government programs?
Can you, Joel, talk about the drastic changes you saw under COVID when these programs were increased?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people's only visual mindset and visualization of the problem are people lined up at charities. So probably the most famous really physical manifestation of COVID when it came to hunger was that famous aerial photo of many cars lined up at a food bank in San Antonio, Texas. But that same month, the number of people who were getting SNAP benefits, called CalFresh in California, used to be called food stamps, dwarfed the number of people getting charitable food. And as my colleague Susanna Morgan from Oregon said, this is really about inequality of wealth. This isn't about food distribution. I've known her for a few decades, and she's always right on the mark, and was right on the mark in those comments as well. And so not only did we see more people going to charities, many more people were included in the SNAP program. Many more people got higher benefits in the SNAP program, and many families benefited from those universal school meals, sometimes lining up on very cold days, very hot days, to get that extra help, which they wouldn't have done if they didn't need it. And the mindset was that all hands on deck, because this is a national crisis. Thank goodness for you guys in NPR, or I'm not just sucking up, or the country wouldn't know about any of this, because the rest of the media ignores this issue more so than they have in any time in decades, and sort of out of sight for policymakers, out of mind. They saw the people lined up at the food banks and then, you know, moved on to the next issue. So it went down temporarily, but almost pandemic levels of food deprivation are happening again in America, and it's not as easy to see people applying for benefits online as to see them lined up outside of a food charity.
I'm really glad you brought this up. Can you talk more about your thoughts about how the media cover this? Because there are a lot of TV, local TV segments about food banks not being able to keep up with demand, but I was only able to find one or two that actually spoke to the issue that Susanna Morgan of the Oregon Food Bank brought up about income inequality and the fact that this is actually a systemic issue. Most of the pieces were about the volunteers, and they're amazing. Of course, the volunteers are amazing, about the cost of food and how expensive it is, or just the fact that they can't catch up with the demand, all important points. But what's missing is how we got here and the fact that this is systemic.
Well, great point. And in my first book, and thank you for plugging it, my first book, All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America, which is still available at your better public libraries and online, is I had a whole chapter on the history of media coverage of hunger in America. In the late 1960s, there was massive media coverage of the problem. CBS had a primetime special on it that won an Emmy Award, was directed by the late, great Edward R. Murrow. And produced by the amazing producer Fred Friendly, who was played by George Clooney in Good Light and Good Luck, and was narrated by Charles Carroll. So the heavy hitters of CBS spent 50 minutes in prime time on this. And the other stories, there were a bunch of Emmys that year for hunger coverage. Most years since then, there's been no coverage of the issues on the national TV, when national TV was prominent in a way that it isn't still today. And not only was there more coverage, and there were reporters whose full-time job it is to cover poverty in America, for a number of years over the last decade, and again, I'm not sucking up, this is just factual, there was only one reporter in America I knew who consistently over a decade had this as a full-time beat, and that was someone for NPR. You know, Pam Fessler for a long time covered it for NPR, and other people have done so since. But not only was there more coverage, it was different coverage. Charles Carroll basically said the reason we had this problem was that the government was failing, and the way to solve this problem was to get the government to do its job. And now even very many well-meaning, you know, media outlets just focus on the food drives and the feel-good volunteerism. That is a scintilla of the solution. The Federal Nutrition Safety Net, CalFresh in California, formerly called Food Stamp, WIC, school meals, are way, way underutilized. Millions of people eligible for SNAP don't get it. Half the people eligible for WIC, pregnant women and children under 5, eligible, don't get it. Half the kids in America who get school lunches don't get school breakfasts. But even with that underutilization of the federal nutrition assistance programs, those programs equal 17 times the dollar amount of food distributed by every charity in America. Let me repeat that. The government programs equal 17 times the dollar amount of food distributed by every charity in America. Don't get me wrong. I run a nonprofit group, and I hope your listeners go to hungerfreeamerica.org. And if you have money to donate, please donate to us. You can also find out where you can get food by going to that website. But the bottom line is charities are not the answer to this problem. The answer to this problem is fixing our economy, creating living wage jobs, making sure healthcare is free like it is in every other civilized country, making sure childcare and housing are affordable, and then making sure there's an adequate safety net. We're the only industrialized Western nation that has this level of hunger and poverty. And that's why we titled our report this year, Hunger is a Political Choice. People want to think this is an apolitical issue, but this is absolutely a political issue. We could fix this almost overnight if we just put the care and attention and, frankly, funds into this that we have into so many other causes.
Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America, a nonprofit working to end hunger in the United States, and the author of two books, All You Can Eat, How Hungry Is America, and America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. As he says, this is a purely political crisis. So what questions or comments do you have about the work that Joel does? Hunger Free America is out with a new report. It found more than 27 million people in the U.S. do not have enough to eat, and they attribute the surge to pandemic-era benefits that have either been cut or reduced. Congress, mostly Republicans and a few Democrats, refused to extend SNAP, the child tax credit, free school lunches post-COVID. You can give us a call if you're dealing with a crisis like this. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Also, if you receive SNAP or you got the child tax credit, or if your child got free school lunches and then it was taken away, we'd love to hear your story. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Joel, when all of these benefits were taken away, we did a lot of shows about this, and it was hard to get a straight answer about how this all went down in DC. So can you give us a sense of what actually happened? Why Congress was not able to extend some of these life-changing programs?
The bottom line is when the Democrats were still in charge, there were not 60 votes in the Senate to do so. When the Democrats were still in charge of the House. Under the Senate rules, for most things, you do need 60 votes. And there was virtual unanimity among Republicans in opposing expanding these programs. And then a handful of Democrats, literally a handful of Democrats, Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, sometimes did not support these expansions. And it's as simple as that. I do note the United States Constitution never mentions 60 votes. It mentions majority rule in the Senate. And when the Republicans are in charge, they often push through key changes with, 51 votes. And there really wasn't the political pressure to force them to do otherwise. The late, great Bob Dole, who was a right-wing Republican senator, but a true champion of anti-hunger programs, once said, I'm paraphrasing, that the reason we don't have an end in hunger is that low-income people don't have a political action committee. I certainly advocate. We certainly work with our colleagues to advocate, but our lobbying dollars are dwarfed by big business. We don't have campaign contributions to give, and not to be cynical, but just truthful, that's what's pushing the political dialogue in America. And even though we may even had a majority of members in both houses of Congress supporting these expansions, very precisely at the time, because there were not 60 votes in the Senate, it didn't happen. Now, with the current control of the House of Representatives in the hands of people who actually want to cut WIC, we're not even talking about, expanding programs again. We're talking about just preserving the benefits that are out there. So it is as pure politics. And because so many people define this as a non-political issue, they don't contact their elected officials about this. I suppose that a fair amount of your listeners who probably define themselves as progressive understand that gun safety is the ultimate political issue. They mock the idea that thoughts and prayers are somehow a substitute for gun safety legislation. No one would think that recycling, as an important thing as it is to do for individuals, is a serious answer to climate change, which needs international governments to change their policies and to change the world's economy. And yet many of the same progressive people know so little about poverty and know little about this issue that they actually think like a canned food drive is solving the problem. that giving a low-income person their leftover pie mix is somehow a serious solution to a problem that impacts 44 million Americans. So people need to first understand what's causing this problem and note that, sure, we'd love, again, more donations at Hunger Free America, lots of groups, your food banks, your food pantries, all need them. But the top thing you can do is contact your senators and your representatives to say, fix this now.
Joel, when you look at the Democrats in D.C., how many Democrats are actually raising hell about this issue on a regular basis?
Well, I'd say a fair amount. And again, not to suck up to a Bay Area station, but, you know, Nancy Pelosi will go down in history as having helped prevent a mass really famine in America by pushing through these legislative processes. I happen to live in Brooklyn, New York, and be a neighbor of Senate Majority Leader Schumer, and he's been excellent on this. I won't pretend that I'm drinking buddies with Joe Biden, but I did have a chance to meet him at an event and talk to him for 18 seconds about this. I timed it. You can see it on the tape on C-SPAN, and he was very sympathetic, and he's provided great leadership on this. So I understand the desire among progressives is to eat their own and that, well, if Biden was only talking more loudly about this, if Schumer was, Pelosi were only pushing this harder, we'd get this done. Unfortunately, that's not how our current political system is working. So, yeah, I'm always going to push them to do more and better, but I squarely put the blame in the seat of the conservatives who are not just not doing more and better, they are actively working to undermine food support for Americans. And, you know, people like to say, oh, no one's pro hunger. I've heard that a zillion times. Well, we've got to grapple with the reality that if you're an elected official and you support not raising the minimum wage and you refuse to raise food aid or you're cutting food aid, you are pro-hunger, and we need to call people out for that.
So let's talk about what's happening on the Republican side, because we're now in the 2024 election cycle. We're hearing nonstop about the Republicans running for president. You've got strategists, Republicans going on NPR on a regular basis. What do you think it's going to take for this issue to become a major, major issue in the lead up to the election?
Sure. And before answering, just if there are any lawyers or the IRS listening, I restate that Hunger Free America is a nonpartisan group. By law and practice, we don't tell people which candidates to vote for. We don't tell people which parties to vote for. That being said, what it's going to take to really change this issue is for people to lose their seat because they're wrong on it. In the same way forces are backing down, at least somewhat, on undermining reproductive choice because they keep losing elections, people are only going to change on this if they lose their jobs. And that's what it's going to take. We will see whether in the Republican primary contest, all these evangelicals people are speaking to in Iowa, are they going to ask their candidates about the message of Jesus Christ, who was as clear as you can be that reducing hunger should be a central part of Christianity. It's also a central tenet of Judaism. Fighting poverty is a central tenet of Islam and every other religious and secular tradition on the planet. And it's going to take people holding their elected officials accountable who claim to be pro-life, but then are voting for, let's say it plainly, anti-life policies.
Right. And when you look at where the hunger crisis is the worst in this country, it's in Republican-led states. Your report shows Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina. As I said in the intro, of course, Democratic-led states are facing a crisis. I think what's really sad about all of this is that once the, for example, the school lunch program went away at the federal level, it then went to the state level. And it's great. We've got it in California. Let's see, Colorado, a number of other blue states have passed universal school lunches across the country, but you're not going to see this in Republican-led states. And that is just detrimental to the people who live in those states.
Yeah, I should say I do live in New York, as I said, and I've been critical of my Democratic governor, Kathy Hochul, for not doing enough on this issue, not doing enough on homelessness, blaming all the social service program problems now falsely on migrants. And I would say to a lesser degree, that's true of Governor Newsom, that the state of California has not done everything it needs to do to address hunger. You know, most hungry people are not homeless, but certainly the state has not done nearly enough to address homelessness. So I'd say, frankly, it's great when high-ranking elected officials want to debate Republicans, but the most important thing any side needs to do politically is to govern better. And so particularly people who are representing progressive states need to follow that up with concrete actions and not just blame Uncle Sam. As you know, California has an economy of its own bigger than the gross national product of most nations. So California could do better. That being said, there's no question it's a bigger problem in conservative states, and they really need to be held to task as well.
Well, and I just found the data. So it's Minnesota, New Mexico, Colorado, Vermont, Michigan, and Massachusetts are going to make school breakfasts and lunches permanently free to all students, according to the Denver Post. But what about Mississippi and Texas and South Carolina? To your point, I just want to mention that Governor Newsom is going to debate Governor Ron DeSantis tomorrow night on Fox. I doubt that Sean Hannity is going to ask these two about what they're doing about hunger, the hunger crisis in this country.
I would bet Kroc family money, big money. That's an inside NPR joke. They're big, generous donors to NPR. But I would bet a lot of money that Sean Hannity is not going to ask about poverty. O'Reilly on Fox, one segment claimed there was no child hunger in America, and he challenged anyone to prove there was child hunger in America. So I immediately contacted their producers and said, I'll prove it, and I'll bring on the parent of a hungry kid. And they yada, yada, yada me to death, and then never had me on. So if I've been charting Democratic debates for presidents over the last few decades. And I don't think there's been a single question asked about hunger, literally out of dozens of debates over, decades. I think the last time this came up when Mitt Romney attacked Barack Obama for doing too much to help people get SNAP. The last candidate to raise this on their own, I believe, was John Kennedy in the 1960 debate against Richard Nixon. So if the mainstream media isn't asking about this, I guarantee the right-wing media isn't asking about it. Although, as you point out, states with the highest levels of hunger, probably the states that have the highest Fox viewership.
Mm. Wow. Joel, can you stick around for our second segment?
Sure.
Great. Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America, a nonprofit working to end hunger in the United States, and the author of two books, All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America, and America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. Hunger Free America's new study found that more than 27 million people in the U.S. do not have enough to eat. They looked at a seven-day period in September and October, and they found that it was 40% higher than the same time in 2021. They attribute the surge to pandemic-era benefits that have either been cut or reduced as prices for pretty much everything, food, rent, healthcare, and fuel, continue to soar. After a break, we'll also be joined by two people who work at food banks in Northern California. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are continuing our very ongoing discussion about the hunger crisis in this country that is just getting worse. As Hunger Free America says in its new report, this is a political crisis. The solution is political. We're joined by Joel Berg, CEO of Hunger Free America and author of All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America, and America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. Now I would like to welcome Tanis Crosby to the show. Tanis is executive director of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Hi, Tanis. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Good morning, Rose.
We're also joined by Allison Goodwin, director of programs for the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Hi, Allison. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's great to have both of you. So, Allison, let's start off with you. What changes have you seen post-COVID at the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa?
We have continued to see the need grow. So, you know, we know with any natural disaster and public disaster and health disaster that we see an increase. But even with that in mind, we did not anticipate the impact that the end of emergency allotments of people's CalFresh benefits would have. We knew there'd be a slight impact, but the fact that we're also casually serving 57,000 people every month is not something that we anticipated.
How many people were you serving before the pandemic?
Oh gosh, probably let's say like 10 to 11,000. So it felt like a lot. So, you know, we went from in our current building saying this is going to be our 30-year building, and now we're going, "Oh golly, okay, 11 years in, what about that? You know, we're maxing out at space and we're, you know, keeping diapers off site." And so thinking about what people need and balancing the reality of still looking at the economy and being nimble.
Wow, that's amazing. So the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa was serving 10,000 people before the pandemic. And today they are serving 57,000 people every month. What about you, Tanis? What are you seeing at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank?
Well, similar. And what I want to just do is also put this within the context of some of the realities that Joel was speaking to. You know, the fact is that in California, benefits with CalFresh, where families were receiving as much as an additional $281 a month, there's now the minimum for CalFresh is $23 a month. So all of the additional benefits for CalFresh went away this February. We also know that the child tax credit, it went away. It expired December 31st, 2022. So when we're talking about all of those pandemic era supports going away, it's hitting families hard. So when you hear numbers like the fact that child poverty has doubled in 2 years, it was reduced by half as a result of pandemic era supports. Child poverty is back up. So those policy conditions have a very real impact on people's lives, and people are hurting. Those supports have gone away and inflation persists, so need persists. So we are also seeing significant need in our community because those safety net supports have gone away.
Tanis, how many people were you all serving the San Francisco Marin Food Bank before the pandemic, and how many are you serving today?
Before the pandemic, we were serving about 32,000 households weekly. Right now, we're serving about 50,000 households weekly. But I do want to flag that as the pandemic era supports are going away for individuals and families, they're also going away for food banks. And over the next 2 years, we will be ending our pop-up pantry program in our communities with those supports from all levels of government expiring.
Wow. So what will you do then? How are you going to deal with this increased demand?
Well, we're squarely focused on making sure that we are serving the needs of our community. And what our participants are sharing with us is that 85% continue to be concerned about running out of food before the end of the week. And 96% say that because of the food bank services, they worry less. So we're deeply concerned about the need in our community that will be unmet. And we are really focused and committed on addressing the consequences as well as the root causes of hunger. In addition to serving critical needs, let's be really clear that in California, there's millions and billions of dollars left on the table because people are just not getting access to the benefits that they're entitled to. 70% of people in our state access CalFresh. Why isn't it 100%? Every year, there's $5 billion worth of benefits that are just not utilized because of red tape, because of lack of access. So we've got to be focused not just on addressing the immediate consequences of hunger, but also what can we do to work more upstream? How can we get more funding to put in people's pockets so they can buy food of their choosing at a local store? It's all of the above, all of the solutions we need to work towards, because this has to be an imperative. We've got to address this urgent crisis that persists.
Joel, do you find that across the country that people are not taking advantage of these benefits because they either don't know about them or because of red tape?
Yeah, it's mostly red tape. In my experience, low-income people engage in a hassle-to-payoff ratio. How much time is it going to take? How far am I going to have to travel? How much work am I going to miss? And how much in wages from that job am I going to miss? How am I going to be humiliated at these offices in applying for this work versus how much we are going to get in benefits from this. That's why we're pushing what we call the HOPE Act, which would give grants to states, counties, and tribal governments to make it easier for people to apply for multiple benefits online. In most states, you can't even apply for SNAP, which used to be called food stamps, and WIC for pregnant women and children under 5 in the same application. So it's absolutely true that these programs have been designed, and they were designed by Southern segregationists in the 60s and 70s to make it more difficult for struggling people to get this help, even though most of the people getting help are white. That's not what they thought. So it is a huge problem around the country. And as I said, half the kids in America who get school lunch don't get school breakfast. Nearly half the people in America eligible for WIC don't get it. So it's really a crime that we have this wealthy Uncle Sam who is eligible to pay for these benefits, but we're not utilizing it.
And to your point earlier, Joel, about how a lot of people just don't know about this crisis. What would you say to people? I mean, to think that almost half of the country does not make a living wage. Half of people working today do not make a living wage.
Well, I'd say not to be churlish, but many of the elites don't know about this crisis. Mm. You know, half of all Americans at some point in their life will receive SNAP benefits. And a big mistake of not you, but others in the media is thinking that people in hunger are this small little subgroup. The fact of the matter is 10 times the number of people are sometimes poor in America than always poor. And I think that's what the country doesn't understand. And that's why I'd say to people, this is about inequality of wealth. This is about lack of upward mobility. And that's why if you really want to end the hunger crisis, you need to help more low-income people enter and stay in the middle class.
Allison, what can you tell us about the changes in the people that you're seeing at the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa? Some of the other people who work at food banks interviewed in the local press have said that, you know, someone who made $2,500 a couple years ago did not need these services, but because food costs are so high, they're seeing people now need these services.
Yes. We are absolutely seeing the same thing. So in fact, people are sharing just that even they don't identify as poor or low income. So it's even something that they're having to come to terms with themselves to say, no, like I just need help. Because to Tanis's point, all of those safety net services that some were relying upon and were taken away. Of course, they're in our food lines, but also the people that say, oh, I'm just having a hard time affording my rent and affording food and affording fuel. And so they're just saying, wow, I actually need this as well. So not only are we seeing more people are coming more often. So we used to think, gosh, we have a lot of food distributions that are weekly. And in fact, they can come as often as they need to. But when we would pull metrics and say, I'm just curious, how often are people coming? It was 2.1 times a month. So they were coming when they needed it. And now not only are there more households, but some of those same households are coming 2.7 times a month. So it's just that the reality for them is how far they could stretch it, how far they could go before they'd have to dip into services. All of those pinch points are becoming more of a reality that they're relying on us more and more.
Tanis, what would you add?
I would add just, I really want to center on what our participants are sharing with us. And our participants are sharing that the number one reason they're seeking the services is because of the cost of groceries going up. When we look at what the reality that our participants are experiencing, I mean, this is a huge concern. 60% of our participants are working, 39% are single parents. So people are bridging the gap between what they need and what they have by relying on the safety net providers. Food banks are often that last line of defense, and we make a difference We also need to address both the consequences and the causes. It's a both and. But what I'm really proud of is that we get to work in partnership in this big movement to end hunger. And that's our focus. It is on ending hunger in addition to addressing the immediate consequences of what's not working for families. So we're squarely focused on that. And it does feel good to make a difference each and every day to know that you are making an immediate and profound impact, because food is everything.
Is this sustainable? Are you going to be able to keep up with all of this demand?
No. And that is why we are going to be scaling back over 2 years thoughtfully to a level of service that is at the level of resources that are available. So that is hard. And just as we see these pandemic era supports going away for families and households, they are going away for food banks. So I do think that we've got to double down with political will and solutions that are ground up and squarely focused on the lived experience of the people experiencing the reality.
Tanis Crosby is executive director of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Before the pandemic, they were serving 32,000 households a week. Today, they are serving 50,000. Allison Goodwin is director of programs for the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Before the pandemic, they were serving 10,000 people a month. Today, they're serving 57,000. We're also joined by Jill Berg, CEO of Hunger Free America and author of All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America? Well, their new report found that more than 27 million people in the U.S. do not have enough to eat. That number has gone up 40% since 2021, mostly because pandemic era benefits were cut or reduced. Mostly Republicans and some Democrats refused to extend SNAP, the child tax credit, free school lunches. If you have any questions or comments for our guest or a personal story you'd like to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Allison, given that demand is so incredibly high and you're all doing whatever you can to make sure that people actually have food and nutritious food, I should say, what are you seeing in terms of donations from your community?
We are not seeing a completely lying flat. So after the pandemic, immediately after and during, it was a little bit sort of scary, to be quite honest, of saying, oh gosh, where is the food even going to come from? And I will say that our local food donors have rebounded, and we do have a consistent level of donated food coming in. It's certainly not, to Tanis's point, like the USDA supports that we would hope to see being stable, and if not consistent, certainly growing because the need is growing. So it's not that we're sitting flush with food, but we are able to maintain what we call our provision of help. And while we pride ourselves on client choice, that people can say no, thank you, or if they don't eat animal protein, they don't have to take it. But we pride ourselves on offering milk and eggs and protein and a bounty of fresh produce and shelf stable items. And we don't want that to change. So we don't have plans to take that away, because it just fundamentally doesn't feel right to say, well, if we are not providing food assistance to those that need it, who better than us to do so? So we are standing up to advocates, like we are doing all the things that we can to move that needle. But at this moment in time, fingers crossed and voices loud and, you know, forging ahead to make sure we're doing what we can to keep up.
Tanis, what are you seeing at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank in terms of donations?
Well, as we're experiencing very similar circumstances, and we work really closely with Allison and team, but, you know, fortunately, we are able to source beautiful produce that is in season, that is generally grown in California, and that we get to share that with our community. So we're really, really proud at the quality of food that we can share, because this is a dignified, accessible experience where you can come and receive nutritious food that you choose, right? So that, you know, this experience that we want to create for our community is really about sharing in the bounty of the harvest. This is not about, you know, dusty cans of food that have been donated by somebody who doesn't want it. This is beautiful food that you would want, mm-hmm. so that there is a feeling of dignity and choice. So I really want to make sure that everyone listening knows that food banks are about creating connection. It is about caring in our community. And it is an act of caring when you volunteer, when you make a donation. And it is also an act of striving for something that is different and better than what we have, because we envision a world where everybody has the resources they need to thrive. And that includes food and that includes income. So it really is about mobilizing together, because it takes a community to work to end hunger. And while donations are down from pandemic era highs and government supports are going away, we persist. We forge ahead, and we will make magic happen with every dollar. And we just were really grateful for all the good that we can do with the resources that we have. And we are absolutely tenacious in moving forward with strong voice and centering on the voice of our participants to keep advocating for good policy that can work to end hunger.
I mean, Joel, the fact is, if government officials are going to fail on this, we as a community need to talk about this and then take the action required to ensure that people have the nutritious food that they need.
Yes, but the action required is getting them to do their job. Lots of well-meaning people started community fridges in the pandemic, but we need to understand that's just a dollop of the problem. We should not keep the eye off the ball that we need to get our elected officials and our economic officials and business leaders to do the right thing. It's wonderful that business leaders donate to groups like ours, but first and foremost, they need to pay their employees a living wage. There's so many very, very, very wealthy tech companies in the Bay Area. How much are the people cleaning their offices at night getting paid? And are they paid so little that they have to rely on food banks or government assistance programs? Those are the real questions we should be asking.
Right. Well, I also wanted to ask you, Joel, about another study we came across doing research for this show. And it's really shocking. Between 1999 and 2020, over 93,000 older adults died from malnutrition in this country. This is according to a report just released from BMC Medicine. They found that the number of elders who are dying from malnutrition are just skyrocketing. The study's authors write, to the best of our knowledge, this is the first study to analyze malnutrition mortality trends among older adults in the U.S. Is this something that you all look at Hunger Free America?
Oh, absolutely. And malnutrition among seniors, like among most people, is primarily an economic issue. But there is the other issue of some older Americans, not all, many older Americans are able to feed themselves physically for decades and decades, but some just don't have the physical ability to do so, even if they have enough money. That's why we need a dramatic expansion of programs like Meals on Wheels to allow them to not only provide healthier meals to people in their homes, but to make sure they can spend a little time with those folks. One of the top reasons people are institutionalized as older Americans in assisted living or nursing homes or, God forbid, hospitals is the food-related issues. So not only is this the right thing to do morally to better tackle senior hunger, it will save us a boatload of money as a society that we're now spending on assisted living centers and nursing homes, that we could not spend that money if people had better nutrition at home and didn't have to be institutionalized.
Well, final question to you all. We have a few minutes left. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've got an election coming up. And in order for anything to move on this, the Democrats are going to have to get 60 senators. They're going to have to get the House and win the White House. Joel, if that doesn't happen, is this just going to get worse?
Well, we have to keep pressuring both sides to do better. There was a time when the Republican Party was a leader on these issues, as well as the Democratic Party. And we have to organize better to prevent cuts. if conservatives take charge. And then we also have to push progressive state governments like those in California to step up to the plate. Again, California can't just blame the federal government if it doesn't address this problem better.
Annis, final thoughts from you?
I want to bring it down to what we can do right now, because again, in California, we can demand that 100% of everyone who's eligible for CalFresh benefits gets benefits. So let's send that message loud and clear, and that let's do what we can today as we work towards those big solutions that will take time. So every action counts. Consider donating, consider volunteering, consider getting engaged in civic action. All of the above are ways in which we keep this movement going.
Who should listeners contact about CalFresh to ensure that everyone who's eligible has access?
It's a state program that is administered county by county by county, and that's part of the challenge. Mm-hmm. So it's both talking to supervisors in addition to state assembly members.
And Allison, final thoughts from you? We've got about a minute left.
I would say focus on your local, what you can do. So giving time and giving money and giving food to your local food bank, and feeling like you're doing something in your community. Meanwhile, advocating for sure, joining us in that, you know, strong fight to make sure that the long game is considered as well. But I do think that people can make a difference locally. So if they're in any community, sort of joining their local food bank to understand what's happening, and so they can speak to it and act on it as well.
Allison Goodwin is director of programs for the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. They were serving 10,000 people a month before the pandemic. They're now serving 57,000 people. Tanis Crosby is executive director of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. They were serving 32 households weekly before the pandemic. Today, they're serving 50,000. Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America, a nonprofit working to end hunger in the U.S. They just released a report that found 27 million people in the U.S. do not have enough to eat. The numbers are 40% higher today than they were in 2021, mostly because pandemic-era benefits have either been cut or reduced. Joel Berg is the author of two books, All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America, and America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. Joel, Tanis, and Allison, thank you for your important work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can find more information about the work of our guests and how you can get involved and help and speak out about this issue, yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Armon Olia for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.